Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with a record-setting Navy fighter pilot. We'll hear him explain the unprecedented part in a bit. 90-year-old Royce Williams of Escondido, California, one of the old, bold pilots who gather every Wednesday morning to share their memories. Mr. Williams' memories go all the way back to Wilmot, South Dakota. He served nearly 40 years in the Navy, retiring with the prestigious rank of captain, and his decorations include the Silver Star, awarded for the events of November 18, 1952. When he succeeded against ridiculous odds in a major mismatch, a dogfight in which he ended up alone in the skies over the Sea of Japan against 7 Soviet MiG fighters. Sort of like David and 7 Goliaths, as he quipped before we left off. He shot down 4 of them, but perhaps more impressively, he survived even after he ran out of ammunition and had his plane damaged extensively when one of those MiGs scored a hit on his F-9F-5 Panther. He wasn't allowed to discuss it at all for over a half century because of the potential far-reaching implications of an American-Soviet engagement, and also because of the secret surveillance being carried out by the fledgling National Security Agency, the NSA. And no one would have ever heard the story quite like this if he hadn't survived a very dangerous high-speed crash landing.
About the landing, you said you had the elevator and that was it. You've got no rudder. Your plane is damaged. Obviously, you're out of ammunition. You can't defend yourself. Where did you have to bring it down, and how did that all unfold?
Well, I was now being guided to the task force by the Combat Information Center controller, and I, on my own, flew on down. I knew the base of the clouds were 400 feet, so I just settled down under it. And I was thinking all along that something might just really go wrong and I'm going to have to eject out of the airplane. But once I got below 1,200 feet, I didn't have the capability to eject safely anymore. So I was pretty much committed, either that or ditch the airplane. But in the terrible storm that was going on, I would not have survived that. Besides, this was November and the temperature of the water was so low. Even though I was in an immersion suit, I probably wouldn't survive more than 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I was committed, and I had to use emergency systems to get the tail hook down and the landing gear down. And I didn't know what speed I could fly at, so I was testing it while I had time. And I found that below 170 knots, that's probably about 190 miles an hour, the airplane would stall, and I had to come in hot, much faster than we normally do. But I couldn't guide the airplane to be exacting as required for a carrier landing. Incidentally, I was shot at by our own ships when I came in because they were at ready to fight. The battle was on for them, and I hadn't been identified as a friendly, but that was brief.
Just what you need after everything you've been through, 7 MiGs shooting at you, and then your guys are shooting at you.
Yeah. And I couldn't line up with the carrier. I got pointed at it when it was into the wind, but I couldn't. This was a straight deck before we went to angle decks. Mm-hmm. So I had to line up right on down the deck, and I couldn't do it. I could aim at the airplane, but I probably would have just, if I hit the airplane, the deck at all, probably bounced off and gone over the side. But the commanding officer of the ship, at the last moment, turned it and lined it up with me, and I ended up with more or less a normal landing.
More or less a normal landing after all that.
Yeah.
And then you said afterwards is when it really sank in for you. Have you ever met another pilot who shot down 4 Russian planes in a day?
There aren't any American pilots who have shot down 4 jets ever on one mission.
You're the only one?
Only one. The Air Force, in its total commitment, you're fighting the MiGs with an F-86 Sabre, equal or better airplane in some regards. And the most they ever shot down in one mission was 2. And this is after they've been fighting them and fighting them into all kinds of experience. And there were 6 of them that got 2 in one mission out of all that. And it wasn't their first mission by far.
So here, you're the only pilot that's ever done what you've done. but you have to keep it a secret for a half century. Was that difficult or no big deal for you?
I learned to live with it. And I it was initially because in our squadron, we have camaraderie and so forth, and we're all busy fighting the war, and we're going back to doing the defense of our troops and so forth. And I never talked about it because when I was cautioned not to say what I knew, the only way I could avoid it was just don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. And it was kind of hard being in there, it being sort of a centerpiece of our deployment, and hush, hush. You know, people kind of look at me strangely and say, I guess, why is he so closed-mouthed?
And how long did you stay in the Navy?
Well, I went on a physical disability retirement in 1970, late 75, almost 76. And then I got recalled. I eventually got my regular retirement in 1980. Mm-hmm. It was 1942 stint with Minnesota Guard. And then from 43 to 80 in the Navy. And then after I retired, I got recalled one more time to go out as a Commodore of a task force for training.
During the Vietnam War, what were you up to?
I was a wing commander on the Kitty Hawk. I was flying F-4 Phantoms and A-4 Skyhawks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of interesting experiences there as well. And the second tour, because of injuries and stuff I had from a plane crash one time, they limited me from some of the medications they were authorized, and going from 5.5 grains of thyroid a day down to none, I was losing my hair and tired. And when they realized the mistake and that, they sent me orders that you're authorized for command at sea, in combat, in naval aircraft, in command, but not at the actual controls.
Mm.
So I got myself in the school for naval flight officers and went back as a wing commander in the back seat.
When's the last time you flew?
Well, I haven't done any real active flying since being relieved as the wing commander. And I would fly with others. When I was chief of staff com for Westpac, we had a lot of commanders that would come on up and fly missions out of Atsugi, Japan, and I would fly along with them as co-pilot, and for my own amazement, mostly.
Mm-hmm. You nonchalantly mentioned injuries from a plane crash. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have that experience. Have you had more than one of those experiences, or what's the one you're referring to?
No, the only one that I really crashed, I've had some very interesting. I brought one airplane back with Phantom with both engines on fire, and loss of power. I had to land an afterburner, which was only one of the kind. But the Phantom was flown around the world by the British and the Aussies and a lot of Americans, and they'd lost 16 airplanes in a row to a double engine fire, and here it happened to me. But they had always bailed out. I had my backseater eject, but I brought the airplane back, and they found out what caused it and corrected it, and we had no more of that.
And what were the extent of your injuries?
Well, I have 11 vertebrae that aren't right.
Only 11?
Yeah.
So you had your backseater, as you said, eject.
Yes.
You stayed with the airplane just because you thought, hey, if anyone can pull this off, I can, or what?
No, it was because my training... As long as it's flying and I'm able to command it, I stayed with it. I still had the option. If something suddenly happened, I could eject.
Mm-hmm.
But I flew to board, and I didn't want it endangering hospitals and schools and all of that. So I just drove it till I got back aboard the base.
So you started flying as a pilot in World War II, Korea, the Cold War, the Vietnam War. In all that time, did you have a favorite aircraft you flew?
I did, amongst the propeller airplane, the F-8 Bearcat. It had so much power that it was stunning. And then the next thing was in the jets with afterburners. And one of the most exciting airplanes I flew was the F-8 Crusader.
And another question that comes to mind in all that time, and you made reference to growing up in the nuclear age, you're there at Nagasaki after that impact. You're around Nevada when they're testing bombs and out in the Pacific when they're testing. And then you said that later on you had to deal with that in some of your deployments, some of the aircraft that you were involved with. In light of that, do you have some insight that most of us don't as far as how close we came to nuclear weaponry being deployed again?
Well, there were an awful lot of people that were deployed in the same mission, and I suppose the closest we really came to it was the Cuban incident.
Any specific knowledge of that you're aware of?
Well, I was on the East Coast. I was serving in Washington for the Navy, had a promotion plans at the time. And then I went to squadron command of VF-33 on the Enterprise, who were a part of the activities during the Cuban incident. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the pilots had taken part in that.
Is it somewhat amazing to you that we haven't gotten to that point?
Yes.
I guess another thing comes to mind, that the perspective that you have on all these conflicts and the men that you served with through, you know, parts of five different decades in the Navy. What are you most proud of, and what are you most thankful for?
Well, I had my sights set on this thing as a kid. It's what I wanted to do, and I guess I'm pretty happy that I did it.
Well, thank you for serving our country, sir. Thank you for telling us a story that wasn't told for a long time and that only you can tell. I got to ask you about this group here, the Old Bold Pilots. How long have you been coming here, and what do you get out of it?
I guess I've been about 4 or 5 years. It was banded well before that. I was invited by another well-known Navy pilot, T.R. Schwartz, to come over here about the time it first began. But I ignored that for a lot of years, and then finally I got involved with the same guys at a couple of other groups where we meet on a regular basis, the Quiet Birdman and Bagels and Bologna. And through them, I got invited over here.
And I imagine you hear something different every time?
Well, there are a lot of good stories out there.
What impresses you? What about these gentlemen gets you excited to come?
Well, I guess in the legacy, we've all been pretty much through the same thing, and we share it knowing that, but not getting excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Last thing for you. In light of everything you've experienced, and you've seen the world at some very tense moments, is there anything that, as we look ahead and try to learn lessons from our past, that with all your insight and personal experience, you would like to pass on?
I've seen an awfully lot of change from a kid on the prairie in Dakotas, where it was pretty much horse and buggy, especially in the wintertime, to where we have all this electronic stuff, including warfare now. It hasn't changed the world much. There are always wars. There's always danger. It's fought differently. It's just as dangerous. And we depend on good leadership. We're in a horse race for a new president, and I hope we get a good one.
Don't we all? That's Royce Williams, 90 years old. And also, one thing that you'll find in the magazine article that I have linked at hometownheroesradio.com that Royce didn't get to in this interview is that about a month after that dogfight with the MiGs, he was summoned to meet with President-elect Dwight Eisenhower and explain what he had observed about those Soviet fighters. Larger-than-life generals Mark Clark and Omar Bradley were there too, and you'll find out what Royce regrets about one mundane choice he made that day. So check that out at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. And really, I know there are a ton of great tourist attractions around San Diego, even some incredible military-themed ones. But what better way to engage with history than to meet some of the guys who lived through it, hear their stories, shake their hands, thank them for their service to our country? The Old Bold Pilots are there at Oceanside every Wednesday morning at 7 at Denny's on the corner of Vista Way and El Camino Real. Time to wrap this one up, but I hope you can join us again for the next installment of Hometown Heroes. Until then, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.